Welcome to Your Turn, Mike Halsey. Glad to have you with us today. Going to be a very interesting show. We're going to start out talking with Carol Bonacero. She is president of the Senior Executives Association. And, of course, the SEA represents all of the 7,000-plus career people in the Senior Executive Service. Many of them feel like they're under attack these days because a member of the House and a member of the Senate are looking at proposed legislation which would make it easier for the Veterans Administration to fire senior executives. And the implication, at least to me from reading it, is that once we give you this, you better fire some people or else. Carol, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Mike. It's always a pleasure to be here.
I know how busy you are, so I really appreciate you coming in. First off, you were yourself a senior executive, weren't you?
I was.
Okay. What agency did you work with?
Well, the last agency was the Commission on Civil Rights.
You must have been one of the, in that first group almost.
I was. Yes. A very long time ago.
That's amazing. Yeah, this is a Carter administration initiative as part of the civil service reform, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah. Okay, now we've got 7,000 career people. They have certain protections now. I think you've referred to it as a getting to know you period. But once a new administration comes in and they bring in their political appointees, Schedule Cs and the like, and their version of the SES, they can't move anybody from the career civil service for, is it 90 days?
It's 120 days.
120 days. Okay, so that's the getting to know you period. So,
yes.
And by that time, presumably, they've realized these people are here for a reason.
Presumably.
Well, political appointees, everybody out there knows, come in all shapes and sizes. Some are brilliant. Some are downright dangerous. The average shelf life, I believe, according to Brookings Institution, is something like 18 months. But these are the people that the career people have to work with and sort of liaison between the political appointees and the, this is the way we do things, sir.
Indeed. And sometimes there really is a get acquainted period, and sometimes the get acquainted period really amounts to, well, let's just see how long I can ignore him or her and then do what I'd like.
Yeah. Is there much movement around after that 120-day period?
You know, I honestly have not ever seen any real numbers on it, but there certainly is some.
Yeah, okay. And defense, well, I would guess, has the largest number of SES people.
They do.
And then VA is right up there, I think.
Veterans Affairs does have a good number. I think it's somewhere in the vicinity of 750.
Okay, now would you tell us who these members of Congress are that are proposing this and what they're proposing?
Well, Representative Miller and Senator Rubio has proposed a companion bill in the Senate, has proposed a bill that would enable the Secretary of Veterans Affairs to basically fire senior executives at VA with no due process, or, interestingly enough, to remove them to any place in the general schedule. In other words, he could propose moving them to a GS-7. And I should not use the word propose because he simply
could.
Representative Miller claims that as far as he's concerned, he sees no punitive action taken against executives who allegedly have not done their jobs well. And one of the things he cites are some deaths, preventable deaths in VA hospitals. And it was interesting to me the other day, I happened to Google preventable deaths in hospitals. And I discovered a study that was released last September by a very prestigious journal called the Journal of Patient Safety, which, based on their work, their studies, their research, has estimated that as many as 440,000 people a year die from preventable medical errors in hospitals. Now, you know, any preventable death is
sure
one too many, but the fact that there are so few in VA hospitals is really amazing. I think that the fact that Secretary Shinseki has chosen not to fire any career executives, at least that I'm aware of, indicates that after looking into these situations, he's determined that they were not responsible.
I believe I saw in some of the reporting done by Jack Moore of Federal News Radio and an interview Francis Rose had with one of these members of Congress that they were saying that they thought that the career people were keeping things from the secretary, that they were covering up things.
Well, you know, there are always allegations, and I'm reminded of a case that occurred after our Presidential Distinguished Rank Award Banquet last year, when there was a great flap in the Pittsburgh area newspapers about one of the award winners, who was a VA executive in charge of one of their networks. And the network, if memory serves, had something like 7 hospitals. At one of those hospitals, there was an outbreak of Legionnaire's disease, which is very tough, as you probably know, to control. And he had been given his award the prior fall, late fall, I'd say October, November. And late in April, the IG released a report about that hospital. This executive was never even named. He obviously was seen as bearing no responsibility. It was a situation where, in fact, I'm not sure that the IG had named anyone specifically. But in any event, the brouhaha was that, the number one, this person should not have received his rank award, should in fact be fired. And I think you look at this bill now, and you can see how, were it enacted, a situation like that would play out, where someone would be tried in the media. There would be a lot of pressure on the secretary to fire him or her, and we'd be off and running. It sets a very dangerous precedent.
Well, and you mentioned earlier that one of these bills, or maybe they're identical bills, would permit the secretary to put them anywhere in the GS system.
Correct.
So presumably save pay would prevail.
No, why would it? I don't believe
really?
So, because
okay.
This is... Now, I will tell you, I'm not 100% certain of that, but I don't know whether it would or it wouldn't, because this would be a brand new statute. And it really is worrisome. I mean, I think it, you know, you understand his concern about that we all share for getting the best care for our veterans. But this is not the way to go about it. What's going to happen eventually? I'm certain an awful lot of VA executives who are at retirement age, who love their jobs, who care about their work. In fact, guess what? 1/3 of these career executives at VA are veterans.
That's amazing. That's very high. Government is high, but that's very high for government.
I'm sure that they would prefer to stay on, but a lot of them are reaching the point where they're saying, this is just too much. I can't do my job effectively under these kinds of conditions. So you have to worry about who's going to want these jobs with the kind of rhetoric we hear in the Congress. There's also another bill that's been introduced that would prevent VA from giving any performance awards to their senior executives for 5 years.
That's amazing. I mean, that's at least in one department, if all of that's true, that's a complete unraveling of the civil service, isn't it? Not just at the executive level.
It certainly is an unraveling of the senior executive service system. And it truly is worrisome. We're going to see, I'm seeing some very good people leaving. And I'm just certain, given what we know and folks we've talked to, that the really talented, able 14s, 15s who might take their positions or certainly aspire to them, why would they want them?
Yeah, this is particularly given the salary gap and the caps and whatnot.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a short break here. I'm talking with Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association, and it's about this legislative proposal that would give the Secretary of the Veterans Administration, Department of Veterans Affairs, the Department of Veterans Affairs, I'll get it right, would give him the authority to move people, to fire them, to bump them back into a much lower grade, presumably with a pay cut. So very interesting, and I'm going to ask Carol about motives when we come back.
GW baseball fans, the Colonials returned to the newly renovated Barcroft Park for another exciting season. Second-year head coach Greg Ritchie leads a team filled with hungry young players and experienced veterans, coming off an appearance in the semifinals of the A-10 championship. With 29 home games, season tickets are a great deal at only $50 each. Join the excitement at Barcroft Park and help GW Baseball raise high the buff and blue. Call 202-99-GW-TICKS or visit gwsports.com/tickets today.
Government Cloud Brokerage. Who, what, when, where, why. Panel sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology, featuring a group of government and industry leaders discussing the growing complexity of cloud computing infrastructure and how agencies are evaluating and acquiring cloud brokers. To listen to the entire panel program, go to federalnewsradio.com. Or to learn more, go to gdit.com/cloudbroker.
I am for the child who's had 7 addresses in a single year because she's in foster care, because her father abused her, and because her mother couldn't believe her. I am for her, the child who no longer believes in others or believes in herself. I am for that child. So I am there for that child. To listen to her, to speak for her, to champion without compromise for what's in her best interest. Because if I am, she will be half as likely to languish in foster care and that much more likely to find a safe, permanent home. That is the child I am for. I am a volunteer child advocate. I am you.
Lift up a child's voice, a child's life. Get involved at CasaForChildren.org.
You can scan your router for open ports. You ever done that?
No.
Called Shields Up. You go to Gibson Research Center, GRC.com, click Shields Up, and it will scan your router and give you an open port report.
Huh.
And then you can actually, if you've got a bunch of ports that are open, you can actually log on to your router web interface, and you can close the ports in your router interface.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
AFSEA's annual Homeland Security event focuses on fourth-generation DHS, remaining ever vigilant, taking place March 10th through 12th at the Reagan Building. The conference features speakers from all levels of government, military, and industry. Sessions cover mobility, interoperability, information sharing, big data, cybersecurity, and IT priority. Register to attend or exhibit at www.afsea.org. Keyword, Homeland.
Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you here with us. I'm talking with Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association and was, in fact, one of the first members of the SES back in the day. We hasten to add, we knew each other then, but we were both just were mere children.
Yes, I was a child government
exactly,
worker.
Exactly, yes. And I too. Carol, the members of Congress that are proposing this, it's Senator Burr from North Carolina?
No, Senator Rubio from Florida. And Chairman Miller from the House.
Okay, do you suspect their motives? I mean, is there sometimes in legislation somebody wants to punish somebody or somebody wants to get somebody? Do you see that here?
Look, I have to assume, and I think it's reasonable to assume that Miller and Rubio really care about the veterans. They want these hospitals, you know, run as well as they can be, as perfectly as they can be. But as I said earlier, that's not the case in the private sector or the nonprofit sector. I myself was in a local hospital a couple of years ago, and after surgery, my blood pressure was extremely low. And in came a nurse and said, "Here's your medication." And I looked at it and I said, "What is this?" And I discovered it was a blood pressure medication designed to lower my blood pressure.
Which had already been lowered.
Yeah. So mistakes happen. I mean, it's inevitable, and I think any reasonable doctor will tell you that. I think, you know, my concern about Congressman Miller is he says he's concerned about poor-performing employees at the VA, but his bill only singles out the senior executive service. And the fact that the secretary seems disinclined, according to him, to ever fire anyone, although I'm quite certain there are people. In fact, I know there are some folks who have been forced out over the years. So it's really baffling to me, too, because he says that Shinseki certainly is not doing a great job in that sense. And according to his criteria, he would be arguing to have Shinseki fired, but he isn't. So it's a little confusing.
And the secretary is himself not only military, but a former general.
Absolutely. So, you know, you've got to believe that he cares about this. I mean, it's a very tough job, and I think there are a lot of great things that are being done at VA hospitals. You've been to our Distinguished Rank Banquet. You know some of the folks who have been recognized and the kinds of things that they've done that are just amazing. So, and we support accountability for performance, but I just don't think this is the way you go about it.
Well, if this were to happen, if this were to come to pass, would you expect that maybe next year they might go after the Defense Department, or they might go after the Treasury or Homeland Security?
Well, why not? The Veterans Affairs Department has always had an enormous amount of scrutiny from those committees, and they've held hearings at various hospitals and so on. So I think they are in a somewhat unusual situation, but it certainly does set the precedent, and monkey see, monkey do.
Well, and you're right on that point. If it's deemed to be a good idea in one of the largest, most important departments in the government, one that touches people, unlike many other departments and agencies and services, if it's a good idea for the VA, then why shouldn't it be done in defense, and why shouldn't it be done at Interior, in GSA, and so on?
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing is senior executives have no effective appeal rights to begin with. They have much fewer rights than those employees in the general schedule. So it's kind of ironic. But this bill would go even further and just eliminate any due process whatsoever.
Yeah, it would certainly be interesting to see if anybody has a belief that there is a motive here other than to improve the effectiveness of the VA itself.
But I think it's largely, as a lot of things have been of late, driven more by optics than really smart policy analysis and thoughtful legislating on behalf of not only veterans, the American people generally.
Well, hospitals, we all have our favorite doctors and nurses. But that said, hospitals can be an inherently dangerous place. They are, after all, full of sick people. They're full of germs. Every disease in the community comes in there to be with you. And as you said, is these hardworking, 18-hour a day people, mistakes can be made. But as far as you know, VA has a good track record.
Well, as far as I know, I was trying to find some material online in that regard, and the most recent data I could find was 2008, but. In that year, VA treated 750,000 veterans in their hospitals. Now, I know I'm aware of a couple of deaths, preventable, one in fact, or two, which were actually suicides. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the total number is, but from what I can sense, it's relatively small. With the system we have in the federal government, that the inspector general is on these cases as well. So they've certainly been investigated and looked at. And you have to assume that Shinseki will take whatever action's appropriate. Now, you also have to ask yourself, well, what if Miller and Rubio succeed in having this legislation enacted and the secretary doesn't utilize it? Where will they go next?
Yeah. Well, I know several, I don't know about the current conditions, but several years ago, I was surprised looking at some VA numbers, and I don't exactly know what I thought they were treating, who they were treating. The Vietnam guys now, or Vietnam era guys, are getting on, including me. But a large number of the cases they have are people with HIV/AIDS. And I didn't, that just never crossed my radar scope. But a lot of people do for whatever reason, can be bad needles. But these are people who are really in tough straits, and they're very hard to treat.
Well, and they've done just amazing things, as I say, at VA hospitals, whether it's a kind of long distance medicine for remote areas, very specialized units that treat particular illnesses. They've made real strides, and I think they're to be admired. But, and then there are always issues of, is your budget adequate? I understand there are issues of leadership, but it's an extremely tough job if you think about being in charge of, for example, a network of seven hospitals, and having someone want to hold you accountable for the fact that one of the 23 strains, I didn't realize there were that many, of Legionnaires' disease broke out in that hospital. So doesn't mean that you're not responsible for leadership, but it's often a lot more complex than what's on the surface.
Yeah, and to blame somebody for that, I think the first time I'd ever heard of Legionnaires' disease, maybe it popped up, was 20 or 30 years ago, and it came out of Philadelphia, as I recall.
Yes.
And there was something about American Legion convention at a hotel, but I believe they traced that particular strain to old, faulty air conditioning and pigeons, pigeon droppings, pigeon feathers molting and all that sort of thing. But that was sort of the basis of it. So that's a pretty tough thing to fight.
Indeed. And, as I think about this situation, it's every day brings us something new. We've got a lot of issues right now in the senior executive service generally, and we do worry a lot about the retirements and the next generation.
What's the salary range in the senior executive service?
Up to 180, 1.5. Okay. I have a senior moment now because after 3 years of no raises, I have to stop and think, what is the salary? But that's the cap. Mm-hmm. And the last year for which we had data from OPM about the average salary, it's around $167,500.
Okay, so there's not that much difference than the top step of a GS-15, is it?
There's not. And I hear regularly from senior executives who are supervising folks who earn, if not the same, sometimes even more than they do.
Well, okay, with the bonus. Yeah,
there's motivation.
Yeah, very, very. Well, I love your story about the husband and wife, the salary difference. Would you tell that?
Absolutely. Husband and wife, he's a senior executive. She's a GS-15. Saturday morning, finishing cup of coffee. He's ready to go out the door, go to work. And she says, Tim, how's that extra $1,500 a year working out for you?
Yeah, it's hours put in. Talking with Carol Bonacero, she's president of the Senior Executives Association. Going to take a short break, and we'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com.
Here's Sean Torpy, Director of Infrastructure and Operations Services, FAA, on the Consolidating Mission Critical Systems in Today's Public Sector Environment panel, sponsored by Unisys and Intel.
The next step that we're seeing is concentrating on the applications and the tenants that are hosted within that cloud so that they can have the benefits of cloud from an elasticity standpoint, a self-healing type application so they can expand and contract.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Traditional legacy systems supporting mission-critical applications often require a trade-off between cost-effective performance, security, and predictability. Forward by Unisys helps federal agencies by eliminating the need to choose. Forward delivers the flexibility of standard virtualizations with the security, predictability, scalability, and performance of physical environments, enabling a more agile data center. Learn more at unisys.com/forward. Unisys, delivering a safer and more secure connected world.
Here's Captain Michael Dickey, Commanding Officer, Telecommunication and Information Systems Command at the Coast Guard, on Government Mobility Panel, sponsored by Microsoft.
The business case for mobility in many cases consists of a lot of intangibles. Balancing intangibles and real dollars is difficult. I do think we will potentially run into some end-user resistance as we, you know, face future budget year crunches.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Agencies have turned to telework and mobility to save money and improve retention in the workplace, but they've discovered the benefits of mobile work extend far beyond cost-cutting. Enabling a mobile workforce boosts productivity and improves continuity of operations. Microsoft embraces the mobility movement, focusing on innovations that help public servants at all levels of government fulfill their crucial missions anytime, anyplace, and with a choice of devices. Learn how Microsoft can help your agency execute its mobile strategy. Visit Microsoft.com/government.
CAPS Showcase packages are on sale now and include two upper-level CAPS tickets.
Shot off the draw, and the Capitals have scored!
Two upper-level AHL Showcase tickets.
Ovechkin score!
And an autographed puck starting at $129 on select games through April 13th, 2014.
Shot from Backstrom and they score!
For more information, call 202-266-CAPS. That's 202-266-2277 or visit WashingtonCAPS.com today.
Like Federal News Radio on Facebook for a look at some of the top federal stories each day. Plus, we'll give you a taste of what goes on behind the scenes. Find us at Facebook.com/Federal News Radio.
Former Causey Award winner Lynn Simpson, senior advisor, NDU, explains good leadership.
Making sure that you have shared understanding in every relationship, work relationships, personal relationships, everything that you do is about connecting with people and making sure that you're sharing a thought or idea and that the message you intend to deliver is received. And that takes extra work.
Nominate your best human capital management leader for this year's Causey Award. FederalNewsRadio.com, search Causey Awards.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association. They represent the 7,000-plus career senior executives who run the government really on a day-to-day basis. And these are the people who, when the political appointees come in, they show them, this is the way we do things. This is why we do it. You're the boss, chief, but this is why we do it this way. And it's, I guess it's similar to the British civil service in that there's a permanent class of people there that sort of keep the government running and going, regardless, we hope, of politics. The administration won the election. It's their government to work with. But the senior executives come in and say, you can do it this way, sir. We're watching House of Cards now. You can do it this way, but this is why we suggest not.
Or we'll be happy to do it your way. There are a few things we need to point out to you, though, with regard to whether it's ethics requirements or whatever. And that's the point at which sometimes the relationship turns sour because no one wants to hear the reasons why it's inadvisable.
Right. You said you had some numbers on the SES.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. The retirement data, the actual number of senior executives leaving government increased by 27% between fiscal 10 and 12. And the retirement rate among career executives rose by 43%. Between fiscal 8 and 12. So, you know, that tsunami that we talked about for years, I think it's starting.
Well, they're aging out at two. I mean, obviously, we're all getting older every day, but this group, it's starting to squinch up, and something's got to give.
It is, and I think that an awful lot of them would probably stay on because they really do love what they do and they care about what they do. But I think you take the combination of the three-year pay freeze, the reduction in the performance award pool, which continues to this day, the suspension of the presidential rank awards, the unpleasantness very often with Congress, the kinds of punitive bills being introduced, and it just becomes not much of a fun place to work anymore.
Well, when President Obama very famously told John Berry, the then director of the Office of Personnel Management, he said he wanted to make government service cool again. And John Berry was a master at public relations, and they sold this. And I think a lot of people in the government from bottom to the top were delighted, and they thought they were going to have a real friend in the White House and in the OPM. But in fact, last year, was it last year, they either suspended the rank awards or they kept it quiet?
No, they suspended them. They said there will be no presidential rank awards last year. They never really said why. I mean, arguably due to sequestration. My personal belief is that they are unwilling to defend these awards, that they fear that if it were widely known what the dollar amount of the award is, that they would be viewed as Wall Street bonuses, when in fact they are so defensible. The amount of money these people have saved the government, the accomplishments are just stunning. They're mind-blowing. They're easy to defend, and in fact it would be smart to defend them and let the American people know what government's doing on their behalf.
This person arguably saved you $2.8 billion, and you're giving him or her a $10,000 award.
No, it's 15%. It ends up being around $60,000,
okay.
Let's put it that way. So.
Well, and didn't in previous years, although they allowed the awards to happen, they didn't publicize them. I mean, normally they come in, they bring people into the White House. Normally the president congratulates them or has a picture made with them or somebody from the administration.
That was President Reagan's day.
Okay.
When he actually congratulated them and had a photo taken with them. Actually, it is, by the way, 35% of salary.
Okay.
So it is a substantial number, but they're so defensible. And what they said is there'll be, quote, alternate recognition. So basically, they use the same process of nominations. And I'm aware that apparently this went through the normal process. The White House apparently agreed to a certain small number of them, but has been utterly silent about the, quote, alternate recognition. And we, the Senior Executive Association, although we said we don't really agree with this decision to suspend the awards, we are perfectly willing and would look forward to working with you for appropriate recognition. We will have a dinner. We will, we'd love to have you come, Mr. President. But so far, the silence has been deafening.
I can attest from going to many of those banquets that it's the classiest act in town. You're in the State Department, you're in the treaty room, you're sitting there having a glass of wine, and next to you, the table is where the Treaty of Ghent was signed, ending the War of 1812. Marvelous setting. The view is to die for, of the monuments and whatnot. And then you have some excellent speakers. But the real thrill is sitting at that table with 12 or 10 other people, and you realize how little you've done compared to them. The award winners, just looking at what they've accomplished, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it just every year, I think it can't get better, and it just astonishes me. And, you know, here we are, by the way, in February, and no call for nominations has gone out this year either. So this is the first time ever since the Senior Executive Service was started in 1979 that these awards have been suspended. No other president felt the need to suspend them for any reason. I think it was a horrendous mistake. It set an awful precedent. There's that word precedent again. Mm-hmm. And it really sends a very bad message to the Corps.
Well, does that mean, unless you hear something, that there won't be any awards this year?
Correct.
Okay.
If OPM does not send out a call for nominations, which actually I think the view is they have to do that by law, but, you know, they can keep it and wait until it's too late to actually run the program.
Right, because booking that State Department room is not easy.
Well, you know, we're still prepared to do something this year if the White House will follow through on its promise for, quote, alternate recognition. So I hope someone at the White House is listening.
Maybe cupcakes or something like that. but as of now, there is nobody nominated for these.
No. Well, they were nominated. We
by
understand
their agencies.
They went through the process. I believe that the White House agreed to them. They just have not decided what they're willing to do. Mr. President, sign a letter to them individually. Sign a certificate. Meet with them. I think you'll find they're an amazing group.
Is there a drop-dead deadline that would cause you to miss this banquet?
Well, it takes us a good 3 months to prepare. It's a lot worse than a wedding.
Yeah.
And so we need a couple of months. I mean, if we don't hear something soon, what's going to be the point of doing this at Christmas?
And normally, do you have it usually around April or May?
In April, yes.
April, okay.
When the process was working, at least normally.
And it is mid-February. Check your calendars, folks. Carol Bonsero, thank you for being with us today. Very interesting. And hope we get you back here with some better news. But meanwhile, we will keep tracking the story. We'll be right back talking with Sean Riley and Andy Medici of the Federal Times.
Wizards flex packs are on sale now.
5 o'clock, Wall, top of the arc. He will shoot a three, it's there!
Whoa.
John Wall!
Flex packs include 10 tickets starting at just $12 each. Select the games that you want to see in any seat locations and any increments. With no additional fees or hidden charges, it's that simple.
Give to Beal, Beal going to the basket, slam!
To purchase your Wizards Flex Pack today, call 202-661-5050 or visit WashingtonWizards.com.
Are you paying too much on your credit card annual percentage rates? Get the State Department Federal Credit Union credit card with a low 6.99 annual percentage rate. The SDFCU Visa Platinum card has EMV chip-enabled technology. This provides added security when spending overseas, and you'll save with no foreign transaction fees. Also, enjoy a generous rewards program and earn points toward even more travel. Visit sdfcu.org to apply online today. That's sdfcu.org. SDFCU is federally insured by NCUA Equal Opportunity Lending.
At UPS, we take two things very seriously, your budget and our planet. It's why we've built one of the largest alternative fuel fleets in the industry. It's why we offer eco-responsible services like carbon-neutral shipping and carbon impact analysis. It's also why businesses trust UPS to provide customized solutions that cut costs and boost productivity. UPS is committed to helping you operate more efficiently and sustainably. Learn more at ups.com/gov.
Here's Brandon Good, Director, Network Security Deployment in the Office of Cybersecurity and Communication, DHS, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by SourceFire.
Programs like continuous diagnostics, mitigation, and Einstein 3, I see a great value in those two combined together because of the ability to reduce vulnerability and susceptibility by having understanding of our assets, our vulnerabilities, but coupling that with being able to still defend against ongoing threats.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Agencies today are confronted with significant cybersecurity challenges. New attack vectors coupled with a dynamic threat landscape has led to increasing security complexity and fragmentation. Agencies need a simpler, more scalable, and threat-focused security with visibility across the entire attack continuum. Gartner's most recent Magic Quadrant for Next Generation Intrusion Prevention looks at network security innovation to stay ahead of security challenges. Download the MQ to see why SourceFire is a leader at sourcefire.com/fed.
Seniors and Disasters. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. A survey indicates most seniors are unprepared for natural disasters. The national poll of about 1,300 people ages 50 and older asked, among other things, whether they had a disaster plan and a way to evacuate if they had to leave their homes. At the University of Iowa, researcher Tala Alrusin.
Only one-third of older adults reported participating in an educational program or reading any materials about disaster preparation. It's alarming that about half did not know where to go in case they had to abandon their homes.
Alrusin says family members and members of their community, such as neighbors, should help seniors prepare and help them also in a disaster. The study in the American Journal of Public Health was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthSpeed is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
With thousands of government-related events happening each year, it can be an event just figuring out which ones are right for you. GovEvents.com makes it easy to narrow down the masses so you can find the conferences, trade shows, and webcasts that meet your exact criteria. Join over 30,000 of your colleagues who already use GovEvents.com as their source to find events that matter to them, near them. That's GovEvents.com. It's free, so join today.
Federal News Radio's Jason Miller is on Twitter. Follow him at jmillerwfed for the latest IT and federal management news at jmillerwfed.
Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. An interesting discussion with Carol Bonacero, the president of the Senior Executives Association. And if you want to hear it again or refer it to a friend, remember we are archived on our homepage here, so you can listen anytime, night or day. And now we're going to be talking with Sean Riley and Andy Medici. They are writers for the Federal Times and fairly regular guests here. Gentlemen, you with us?
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much. Sean, you had a piece this week about the intelligence communities having some internal communication problems.
Well, I think it's more the how they manage and keep track of their contractors. I mean, this is an area that's shrouded in some secrecy because of classification rules. But there's no question that since the 2001 terrorist attacks, 9/11, the intel community's reliance on contractors soared dramatically. The current director of national intelligence acknowledged that in his confirmation hearing back in 2010, that they had to ramp up quickly, and the quickest way to do that was using contractors. The problem is that they seem to, according to a Government Accountability Office report, they seem, at least the civilian intel communities, we're talking about like the CIA, for example, Director of National Intelligence, FBI, they seem to be having trouble keeping track of their contractors and also justifying exactly why they're using them in some cases. They're supposed to have a sort of central inventory of what they call core contract personnel. These are people who sometimes work right alongside federal employees, to provide human capital, IT, program management services. And what GAO found was that in many cases, based on a sample, the inventory didn't provide a justification or a decent explanation about why the agency was using a particular contractor.
It's a fascinating example of how Washington works. You have the Congress or the executive branch will order the federal agencies to do something, like the Clinton administration said, farm out all these security clearances, and then along comes the Anthony Snowden and the Navy Yard shooting, and the same politicians say, how dare you do this, bring this in-house.
There's always this tension here that on the one hand, sort of a push me, pull you type situation where back in the 90s, as you noted, I mean, there was a push to outsource clearance work. And now it turns out that it appears Justice Department is suing the largest contract provider, USIS, for allegedly failing to do quality reviews on hundreds of thousands of clearance background investigations. But on the same time, OPM acknowledges they can't do all this on their own. So the question is, how do you, where do you strike the right balance?
Right, and it all comes down to money. Andy, are we back with BRAC, base realignment closures?
Well, that definitely seems to be the push. We've seen a lot more DOD officials coming out and saying that they want it for 2017. It's going to be, their promises, not the last BRAC, but, something like in the 90s when they really do look at cutting the number of installations, closing bases, something that will really save money as they work to reduce the number of, service members that will be there in the future.
So are we going to have more people coming to Washington probably?
Well, I think in this situation, the best bet is that anything large will get larger. Any of the joint bases, any of the newly built facilities in the D.C. area that have seen a lot of people, there's still some room in some of these installations for growth, and that's what we're going to see more of. Some of these smaller bases that no longer serve a real unique purpose, they're more than likely to close those than to close something that they spent a couple $1 billion 7 years ago building.
I seem to recall in the last BRAC that somebody estimated that for every federal worker that's brought to this area, or presumably any area, Huntsville or Ogden, Utah, that five people come with them. And I don't know whether that's family members or support types, you know, merchants or whatnot, but it adds six people total.
Well, that's why you always have these such rigorous fights over BRAC, is because, you know, a lot of communities feel that they have a disproportionate economic impact. You bring in people who are, you know, they're making a certain amount of money, they're making federal wages, they will spend their money, they'll buy a home, you know, they'll put down roots, and communities really want that. And that's one of the things that, you know, BRAC is all about, is trying to figure out a way to downsize without, you know, without having to nitpick every single detail with every community across the country.
Yeah. Sean, I saw you were talking with Beth. Is it Colbert or Colbert?
Oh, Colbert, yes. The Deputy Director for Management at the Office of Management and Budget.
Yeah. What was she in the news for?
Well, she had spoke. This was at a conference hosted by the Association of Government Accountants a week or so ago. And she was speaking, sort of outlining what the administration's second-term management agenda will be. And, of course, we're more than a year into the administration's second term, but Ms. Colbert just was confirmed back in October, so she's just getting started. But kind of looking at what she didn't really provide many specifics, but, I mean, they are going to focus on the agenda will focus on things that are measurable, you know, that have a tangible impact on people's lives. And as you might expect, given what happened with healthcare.gov, the White House is already in the process of relooking how it can get smarter delivery of IT services in the wake of what happened with healthcare.gov, when, you know, the site, you know, which is supposed to be sort of the centerpiece of the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, you know, just didn't work initially. I guess it's gotten better since then, but, you know, is obviously a debacle for the White House, particularly given the you know, the emphasis is put on better delivery of government services. So in any case, it's interesting that they are re-examining this. And, you know, she said they've talked to a lot of people inside government contractors, and then apparently tech firms that don't deal with the government at all, just to get ideas on how they can do this, do it better, essentially.
Again, the way Washington works, I don't ever recall a session like this where the person came out and said, we failed most of our goals, most of the things we wanted to accomplish didn't happen. Sorry. It's always pretty upbeat, isn't it?
Yeah, and she didn't say fail, but she did say the challenges they've experienced. I guess that's the nicer way of putting it. But, I mean, there's no way around it, that it was a failure, at least initially. You know, the question is, where do you go from here? I mean, and given that the, you know, IT has been a big focus of the administration for several years, and I think there's still a question about that, you know, has yet to be fully answered by all these hearings about how they were able to let this one get away.
Andy, you, in the paper, you were talking about, did I get this right, GSA closing 24 data centers. Is that a big deal?
Well, it's sort of in line with a lot of agencies. They're trying to close these non-core data centers, and they've been given targets by OMB. Of course, you know, something that sort of talks about what we've been saying earlier is that the number of data centers is kind of in flux. You know, no one really knows how many there actually are. The initial count was 3,500, then it went to 6,000, then it went to 7,000. So you have to take some of the numbers with a grain of salt, but just the basic idea is that agencies have a lot of these data centers, new technologies and new ways of working these. You know, you don't need as many data centers. You can save some money, you can save some energy, and you can close them down and put that money to better use elsewhere, or at least that's the ideal.
Yeah, well, I would think, and I'm not an IT type, obviously, but that for redundancy's sake, you might want to have three or four, you know, in case of a power failure or a terrorist attack, but 6,000 seems to be a lot.
Well, you know, they define data centers basically as anything with server racks, so it could be in a closet or it could be in a huge building. But the idea is that there is redundancies in the system that you can rely on in case of an attack, but there is always that balance. You know, we don't want to go too far in the direction, just like with all these other situations we've been talking about. You don't want to close so many that you have to rely on a couple and thus be vulnerable. So there definitely is a balance there.
Hey, I wanted to run something by both of you. I don't know if you got a chance to hear Carol Bonacero earlier, but she was talking about the bills by Congressman Jeff Miller and Marco Rubio that would direct and give the director of the VA the authority and the power, and I guess a little shove to fire the members of the SES who don't measure up, to demote them without save pay, and pretty drastic stuff. Now, normally something like this, particularly in a congressional off-year election year, would me to be sort of a yawner. But the fact that a possible Republican presidential contender is making this an issue maybe makes people take up stand up and take notice.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to hear Carol speak. I'd be interested in your thoughts on it, because my understanding is that SES generally don't, members of the SES don't have the same job protections as your normal general schedule federal employee. So I'd be interested in knowing exactly how this bill would, you know, put them any more at risk of being terminated, disciplined, or whatever.
They'd have MSPB, according to Carol, and that's it. And then and they could be demoted. And she said, I said, well, they'd be saved pay, correct? And she said, no, she thought you could go from $181,000 to $30,000 if the demotion. So it seems pretty draconian, and it's aimed at the VA. But, of course, if it happened there, it would likely be passed on to other agencies.
Well, you know, this is one of those situations where you're saying that we have a possible Republican presidential candidate pushing this legislation, but at the same time, there's been a very strong unwillingness by Congress to tackle some of these issues. And you're right, you know, there is a sort of slippery slope argument to make about wedging in that kind of authority at the VA and not at other agencies. So while it's definitely something that everyone should look at and make sure that they are, you know, informed about, at the same time, there's been a lot of messaging that in this Congress, there's really not going to be a lot that gets done. So hopefully this will just be an idea that's used sort of for political posturing and not something that really starts to gain traction among the larger Congress.
That's a good point, and I ask you both. We've just got about 2 minutes left here, but this is an off-year election year. My guess is that not much is going to happen, good or bad, for federal workers.
Well, they passed the budget. They passed the full-year appropriations. And a lot of members of Congress just want to campaign. You know, they just want to get to the midterm elections and get beyond that. And, you know, members of the House leadership and Senate leadership have, you know, said that this is going to be a year where they're not planning on having much happen. So unless there is something dramatic change, or unless there's a lot of movement building behind one particular issue, there's pretty good chance we're not going to see a large amount of action.
Andy, last word. Thank you. And Sean, we'll see you guys next week. Everybody, stay safe. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Thanks, Mike.